Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Thomas Cook India Limited 4Q FY23 earnings conference call hosted by IIFL Securities Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask question after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Akul Broachwa from IIFL Securities. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Yusuf. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on the 4Q FY23 earnings conference call of Thomas Cook India Limited. I invite the company senior management to discuss the results and business strategy. We'll begin the call with opening remarks by Mr. Madhavan Menon, Managing Director, followed by management team, and thereafter we'll open the call for a Q&A session. I would now like to hand over the call over to Mr. Menon to take proceedings forward. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me thank everybody for participating on this call. Let me then kick off by introducing everybody in the room from our side. I've got Mr. Mahesh Iyer, who is the CEO of Thomas Cook India Limited. I've got Mr. Debashish Nandi, who's the Group CFO of the Thomas Cook India Group. I've got Mr. Vishal Suri, who is the CEO, MD of SOTC. Mr. Vikram Lalwani, who is the MD of Sterling Resorts, Sterling Holidays, and Mr. Ramakrishnan, who is the MD and CEO of DEI. I'm pleased to report that we announced a good set of results yesterday, where for the financial year ended 2023, we reported a 163% increase in earning income from operations of 5,111 crores, against which we reported an operating EBITDA of 277 crores and an operating PBT of 63 crores. The performance was primarily driven by Thomas Cook, who reported an operating EBITDA of 117 crores. Sterling Holidays reporting at the same number as an EBITDA number. SOTC reporting a number of 28.4 crores, and DEI reporting a number of 67.8 crores. The primary drivers in terms of our business segments was foreign exchange, corporate travel, the incentive business, hospitality, and the imaging business. All these businesses reported far better profitability than they had in the previous two years, which obviously, as you're aware, were disrupted by the pandemic. If I look at a cost level, I mean, from a cost and productivity level, how we did this, we, through the pandemic, we actually reduced our costs. And in this, for the financial year ended March 2023, you will see a savings of 20% across the group. However, I just want to point out that several companies within the group are clocking at 30%+ in cost savings, and our intent is to sustain these cost savings in the medium to longer term. So there's cost rationalization. A second important point is the improved margins. And if you look at our EBITDA margin for the year ended 2023, it stands at 5.4% as compared to 3.6% for the similar period in February financial year ended 2020. Obviously, all these numbers are showing significant growth because we had losses in the previous financial year as a result of the pandemic. A third important driver was the productivity improvements that we've achieved through automation and digitization relating to the delivery of products to customers. This is across all our segments, not just its foreign exchange, which today delivers products both digitally as well as physically, You've got Leisure, which does the same thing. Our internal processes also have been automated to a significant aspect. The last point I want to make is that our cash and cash equivalents stood at 1,000 odd crores, which was almost the same level as our pre-COVID 2019 number. So we are back in business. We're generating cash, and I expect that in the coming quarters we have a fair degree of visibility, which I will leave to Mahesh and Devashish to address. Thank you.
Thank you, Madhavan. This is Devashish. I'll just quickly highlight the financials for the quarter and for the year before I hand over to Mahesh. So we have had a great year. The financial year 23, our income from operations grew by 163% from 1,946 crores to 5,111 crores. And we'll get into the business by business details of that in the course of in the next half an hour or so. Our costs remained under control, as Madhavan pointed out, leading to a very healthy EBITDA. If you look at our operating EBITDA, and I'll explain that in a minute, our operating EBITDA, as Madhavan pointed out, was about 277 crores. We had made a loss of 126 crores last year.
Yeah.
But more importantly, this is even better than the pre-pandemic year of FY20. In FY20, we made an operating EBITDA of 251 crores, which was at a margin of about 3.6%. This year, in spite of the top line not being comparable to what it was in FY20, our operating EBITDA is at 277, which is a 5.4% EBITDA margin. We'll keep on talking about operating EBITDA, and let me just explain why we qualify this. So there is an item in our financials which is given separately as a disclosure, which is a mark-to-market loss on investment. This is the holding that we have of shares in Quess Corp. These shares are not held by Thomas Cook. These shares are actually held by the Thomas Cook Employee Trust, which is a separate entity. However, for accounting purposes, this is clubbed as part of the standalone and the group. The shares held by the trust are meant for allotment and distribution to employees over a period of time based on their ESOP, the way their ESOPs mature. And this cannot be used for anything else. There has been significant change in values in the price of shares during the year, leading to a mark-to-market, and we have to measure the impact of this on the overall value of the investment made by the trust. So this amount works out to a reduction in value, a notional loss of 35.3 crores. This was only 4 crores last year. So while we have to consider that as part of our EBITDA, it doesn't impact operations in any way, which is why we are making a distinction in our conversation between operating EBITDA and the reported EBITDA. As the volatility in the shares stabilize, this amount will become immaterial hopefully in the years to come. And also the other factor that will influence this is as and when the ESOPs mature, these shares will be given out to employees, and therefore we won't need a mark-to-market valuation anymore. Coming to the reported profit at a EBIT level, we generated 117 crores against a loss of 258 crores, showing the turnaround that the business has made. And at a PBT level, for consolidated business, made a profit of 26 crores and against a loss of 323 crores last year. So all-round improvement across. I will not take too much of time on this. The numbers are there in the investor presentation, which has been circulated to you. And let's talk a little more about the business and hand over this to Mahesh so that he can take you through that.
Thank you, Devashish, and good afternoon, everyone. I would now quickly jump into the segmental numbers, and I think that's where the business essence lies. So I'll kind of walk you through each of the segments that we have, and I'll kind of move you through the full year, that's FY23 as well as Q4 FY23. To begin with, foreign exchange, the segment that we have had a stellar year in the year that went by, FY23. If you look at income from operations, grew almost 2x from about 110 crores to 246 crores. That's a more than 100% growth as far as the revenue from income from operations is concerned. And if you look at the same number for the quarter, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, moved from 38 crores to 65 crores. Now, if I look at the profitability for the same period, it moved from, for the full year, FY23, it moved from a loss of 3 crores in FY22 to a profit of 72 crores. And from an income from operations point of view, moved from about 110 crores to about 246 crores. So it's almost doubling in terms of income from operations and almost like 4 times or 5x in terms of profitability. But the underlying thread to this performance has been a very steady comeback as far as volumes are concerned. For the full year FY23, foreign exchange volumes are back to 82% of the pre-pandemic level, whereas for the quarter, that's Q4 of FY23, the volumes are at 93%. So when I compare it quarter on quarter, we have seen improvement, but as you would know that the recovery to pre-pandemic in the previous quarters were lower, but for the full year it stands at 82% and for the last quarter stands at 93%. Now, when you look at recovery within the segments of foreign exchange, the retail segment is actually at on top of the pre-pandemic level. We are at about close to 103% to the pre-pandemic level, driven by the student segment, which is operating at about 35% higher than what it was in the pre-pandemic level. The travel-related segment, which is a part of the retail foreign exchange segment, continues to be lagging, and it's about close to 75%, kind of trailing the kind of numbers you would see in terms of travel. If I look at the prepaid card business, which largely is reflective of the corporate movement that's happening, our prepaid portfolio has grown by about 80% as compared to the previous quarter, comparable quarter for Q4 at FY23. In terms of sheer volumes, we did about $81 million in Q4 of 22, and the same volume in the current year is at $141 million. For the full year, we are at about $550 million of prepaid card loads. And I think that's one of the best that we have done in a very, very long time. If I look at the float that this business, we are sitting at about close to 850 plus crores of float. That's there as a part of the prepaid portfolio. Again, noteworthy here to mention is the digital transformation. Marvin spoke about the investments that we have made there and how it's paying out for us. If I look at the our digital adoption rate, which is customers coming and doing digital transaction from us, is at about 11% of our total retail portfolio. The B2B business that we conduct through the same digital route, we have about 10% adoption. So overall, about 20% or 21% of the overall retail business is actually happening through digital channel, and we continue to invest in it. The recent directive from RBI in terms of eKYC being enabled to authorize dealers like Thomas Cook, we believe will allow us to further invest in the technology and reduce the friction that comes in completing the last mile fulfillment as far as the customers are concerned. So clearly, from a growth perspective, foreign exchange is set well. We believe as travel happens in the next quarter, which is the traditionally the largest seasonal quarter for the holiday business, we would see the recovery on the travel side of retail for foreign exchange, and that should add to the profitability going forward. Coming to the segment on travel and travel-related services, obviously there are multiple segments in there. As you know, it comprises of holidays, which is B2C. We have got holidays, that's B2B, that we call as MICE. It has got corporate travel, and we have got DMS, which is overseas inbound business as well as India inbound business. Each of them, as Madhavan mentioned, are at different stages of recovery, and I'll try and give you a sense on each of those verticals. To begin with, I think from a recovery point of view, overall recovery for the travel business stands at about 78%. And this is an overall sum which includes India inbound, overseas inbound, as well as domestic international outbound. Now, if I break that up into each of the segments, to begin with, from corporate travel, we are already trending, as we have been saying in the last two quarters. Corporate travel was very quick to come by. Both from a volume and value perspective, we are trending above pre-pandemic, and we continue to see momentum in terms of the growth that we see in this business. This is also at the backdrop of new acquisitions or new clients that we acquired during the quarter, and they have started to trade full throttle in the current quarter. Also, important to mention here that the mix of business between international and domestic, which used to be skewed towards domestic in the previous quarter, has now found balance, and we are trending at similar ratios that used to be pre-pandemic, which is 60% to international and 40% to domestic. Though volume-wise, they are skewed 90-10, but in terms of value, international now counts for about 60%. Now, from a yield point of view, this international traffic or international volumes augurs very well, because that's where we make our margins. And clearly, the comeback on that volumes will add to our bottom line going forward. Also to mention here that we are also doing some real high-tech integration in terms of technology for some of our large customers, which will then eliminate the need of a people-related touch for transactions. As you know, these are travel management services for large corporates. Again, happens to be a little more people-intensive. We are bringing in technology which then talks to the employee self-service portal that each of the corporates have, and that will kind of ease out the journey in terms of booking of tickets, booking of hotels, and more importantly, the way we invoice customers and collect payments. So clearly, it's an end-to-end journey. We've started the pilot on it with a few of our customers, and we expect to continue that journey going forward. Coming to the B2B business of MICE, which is the holidays, we've had a very good set of numbers, both from SOTC and Thomas Cook, the two brands that represent this business in the market. This is at the backdrop of some large wins we have had. As you would know, we've been speaking about the government contracts that we've got. This is a new set of business segment that we have entered in the last three quarters. We managed the Kalo India Group, which the Kalo India Games that happened in MP. We also won the mandate for the Kalo India Games that are going to happen in UP towards the end of this month. We are also one of the three vendors who provide services on the G20 event that's happening, including the World Tourism Council that's going to happen in Jammu and Kashmir between the 22nd and 24th of May. So clearly, the government business has become a sizable portion of our MICE portfolio. It's a very profitable segment, makes us money, and we've kind of diversified our portfolio not only on the international side but also on the domestic side. Also important to mention here that on the MICE side, we brought in new technologies which automates a lot of processes. More importantly, because it involves dealers far flung, and it's important that the entire process of collection of documentation, processing of visa is all routed through a centralized system. So we made this customer self-service app enabled for these set of customers also, which has brought in productivity benefits on the MICE side of the business. Coming to the leisure side of the business, again, from a recovery point of view, overall business is about close to 65% recovery, but for the current quarter, you're seeing the recovery at close to about 69%. Now, you must also keep in mind that this quarter, which is the quarter that went by, Q4 FY23, happens to be an investment quarter, so the volumes are strictly not comparable to the sequential quarter, which is the December quarter, purely because this quarter has the element of people not taking leaves because of exams and everything else. So we are now moving to normalcy where we have to factor in the seasonality of the business. So this is a seasonal investment quarter where we invest into our marketing initiatives. But despite that, I'm happy to report that both SOTC and Thomas Cook on the holiday business broke even or actually made a marginal set of monies. So a traditional investment quarter turned profitable for SOTC and Thomas Cook both. From a volume perspective, international travel continues to grow. The long-haul side of the business is beginning to come back, and for the pipeline for April to June seems very strong. Europe continues to be a favored destination despite the challenges on input costs and visas, and we see a very strong momentum for the European destination for the coming summers. Last but not the least, to comment on the DMS side of it, I think across the board we've seen improvements. I think if you look at Desert Adventures out of Middle East, the volumes have come back. They actually reported profitability in the December quarter. The March quarter is relatively slower for them, but despite that, they came in much closer to a break-even as far as their overseas business is concerned. If I look at Southeast Asia, I think that's where the recovery has been slower. That's purely because markets like Thailand and Bangkok opened much later during the year, and the impact of China is not fully visible. China, as you would all know, opened only in February, and that impact of the business is still to come back. So we believe that both Southeast Asia, Dubai, and Africa will start firing in the next quarter, and we will start seeing results of that into our businesses in the coming quarters. Vikram, can I hand over to you for Sterling, please?
Yeah, thanks, Mahesh. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Vikram Lalwani, and I represent Sterling Holiday Resorts Limited as its Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. I am also joined by Mr. L. Krishnakumar, the Chief Financial Officer of Sterling Holiday Resort. It's a privilege once again to meet and interact with all of you this afternoon. As you may recollect, during the previous earnings call of 3rd Feb 23 in Q3 FY23, I had indicated that Sterling is looking forward to closing this financial year of FY23 with historic path-breaking numbers. I'm delighted to announce the best ever performance of Sterling in FY23. Our turnover was close to 370 crores and an EBITDA was 117 crores, which is at 31%. This is a recovery of almost 6x on EBITDA terms over pre-pandemic period, precisely at about 542% increase, and a growth of over 20% increase over FY22. The operating free cash flow for FY23 for the first time crossed 100 crores at Sterling, and we closed at 113 crores against 58 crores of FY22. For Q4, Sterling recorded a turnover of 89 crores and an EBITDA of 27 crores, which is 30%. Q4 is traditionally a non-seasonal quarter for leisure, but despite that, our occupancies grew by 7%, close to about 62%, and an average rate, average rates also increased by about 9%, closing at 5536. This resulted in an overall revenue growth of almost 18 to 19% over the same period last year. For the quarter, Sterling recorded an operating free cash flow of 32 crores, which is about 125% growth over the same period of the previous year. During the quarter, Sterling also debuted two new destinations, Haridwar in Uttarakhand and Chail in Himachal, and thus taking our portfolio strength to 40 resorts across 38 destinations and 2,500 keys as on 31st March 2023. Now, from a year's perspective, what were the three most attributing factors to this change that has happened? One, our improved resort business. The spends at resorts have gone up. Average room rates are up. Occupancies are up and guest ratios are up. Drive for efficiencies. Our membership vertical has driven a lot of efficiencies, throwing up a lot of cost efficiencies through premiumization and variabilization of costs which were otherwise fixed. We also expanded our footprint across the country on an asset-light model, resulting in incremental revenues and new lines of businesses for the company. I shall very quickly elaborate some of the key operating levers that resulted in this FY23 performance. Our volumes are healthy and we maintained an occupancy of about 66%, which is up from 55% over FY22. Our average room rate growth has been healthy, very, very healthy, 21% over the previous year. We closed at 6268. While surpassing the pre-pandemic levels even by 43%. Pre-pandemic, it was at 4392. Our improved volumes and average room rates resulted in room revenues growth of almost 74%, which is 150 crores in FY23 from 86 crores in FY22. Improved F&B food and beverage business by over 75% over the previous year. We've closed with 79 crores in food and beverage revenues in our resorts versus 45 crores in FY22. And this is because of improved participation, improved spend, and new lines of businesses in food and beverage that resulted in this growth. The growth in guest occupancies and rates went by when compared to FY22. Cost optimization exercises were also undertaken since 2020. And the cost lines continue to be maintained through FY23. In the membership business, the focus continued to driving profitable sales and maximizing yields and variabilizing fixed costs. With the continuous growth of our variable model of membership sales, to that effect, our on-site sales was at 53% in FY23 when compared to only 38% in FY22. Higher down payments of 48% in FY23 compared to 41% in FY22 and 30% in pre-pandemic levels. So therefore, the higher down payments also has a direct correlation with improved operating free cash flows. Strengthening the sales channels resulted in an improved average unit realization with a growth of almost 7% over the previous years. Sterling is confident that the buoyancy witnessed in FY23 shall also have its positive impact in FY24. Sterling shall continue to ramp up its business profitability and in a most scalable manner even while entering FY24. The thrust shall continue to be on leveraging growth in the resort business, sustaining cost efficiencies brought in so far, and bringing about a strategic portfolio expansion rapidly as we enter even FY24. In FY23, Sterling added 6 new resorts across the country: Madurai in Tamil Nadu, Kalimpong in West Bengal, Tiruvannamalai in Tamil Nadu, Penj in Madhya Pradesh, Chel in Himachal, and Haridwar in Uttarakhand. And we shall add on at least another 6 resorts in the first half of FY24, all on an asset-light model. Sterling Resorts is one of the only hospitality chains to have launched a unique and a proprietary distribution platform, what we call Sterling One, in FY23, that enabled Sterling channel partners across the length and breadth of the country and employees of corporate clients to access Sterling inventory in real time and make reservations at pre-approved rates by a click of a button. This has enhanced our presence to 221 locations in India in FY23 without corresponding addition of any fixed costs. This also resulted in an increase in room revenues of 28 crores in FY23, and this platform shall be further enhanced in FY24 to yield even better results. Active participation in industry trade fairs, we believe, also enhances brand presence. To that effect, Sterling has participated in several hospitality trade shows in Q4, and we will further strengthen Sterling's presence in the hospitality landscape in the country. To conclude, we are extremely upbeat and buoyant for our outlook even in Q1 FY24, as well as for the remaining parts of the financial year. Thank you so much.
That concludes the Sterling part. May I request Sir Ramakrishnan from DEI to come and present?
Hi. Good evening, everyone. This is Akhir Samakrishnan. I'm the CEO for DEI. Am I audible, everyone?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Great. So we at DEI have had a fantastic FY22-23. We've had, like the numbers say, we've had a double-digit growth from the previous year. And it's also been our finest and the most profitable year in the history of our existence from the beginning itself. From an Indian rupee perspective, I would put it that from 474 crores in FY22, we've touched 810 crores in FY23. Mind you, this growth has happened keeping the fact that China, Hong Kong and Macau were still not open for us. As a year, it's been extremely not only good on revenue, but also on our EBIT and profit. We've had the highest profit recorded in the year from all of our past performance years. Again, like Mahesh and the others said, we've also had a lot of cost control that has happened through pandemic that we continued through this process. While we also had a lot of growth happening in the existing markets that we were operating, quite a few of our competitions folded up their business in the last 2 years of pandemic, which we got an opportunity of picking up at a much better price, at a much better revenue share rate. That made us more profitable and more revenue had a growth too. As far as the year goes, the results are very clearly showing what we've done. Talking about forward-looking, I think we have an even more exciting and interesting 3 years ahead of us as our plan goes on quite a few areas. From a growth perspective or a revenue perspective, I think we have three geographies that we are highly focusing on growth. Saudi Arabia is opening up in a very big way. All of you must have heard about the amount of attractions and amount of tourism that Saudi Arabia is starting to attract in the next decade. We are ahead of the curve there. We already are in the most wanted RFPs. We've been invited in the most wanted RFPs of attractions out there, while we also secured 2 or 3 contracts for us for the current year itself. We have also a sizable growth planned up, or other accounts signed up in the Far East. Indonesia in particular it's one of our most profitable countries of operations, where we have more than 4 odd locations opening in this quarter as we speak. Malaysia and Maldives are another one where we've already opened three and two locations each, and we have another half a dozen of them lined up in the next 2 quarters. Along with this revenue growth in new geographies, there's also a sizable revenue growth in existing geographies. China opened up in February, March, and April, we have had an outstanding April. So the way it looks like, China from our scheduled plan would be at least 2.5 times higher than what we have anticipated from a budgeting perspective. So China has opened in a very big way. Both our key partners, Shanghai Disney and Universal Studios, are throwing in an attendance of excess of 10 million guests a year, which is what they were originally planned for. During the pandemic, it all had dropped down to between 2 and 4 million. So we've seen a huge, huge uptake up there in China. And China was a challenging country for us for the last 3 years of pandemic. It's probably will become one of our most profitable countries in this coming year or year next. Along with that, in the existing markets like UAE, we still hold our pole position. We haven't lost a single contract, and we have been renewing every contract of ours, with the exception of losing one in Abu Dhabi, which our competition took over. And unfortunately, the first 2 months' results, fortunately for us and unfortunately for them, doesn't seem to be even hitting 30% of where. With all that looking good and great, from a technology perspective, we also invested our time during the pandemic and post-pandemic on upgrading and relooking at our entire solution, our technology solution for imaging. And we are now coming to the culmination of its benefits. The project is running probably more or less nearly on time, with the anticipated delays of 2 months. We're still within the reach. So we'll be unleashing our technology solution called as Hummingbird by the end of third quarter. And the benefits of that are going to be at least giving us an efficiency levels of at least 20 to 30% better off than where we were. It's also scheduled to reduce our cost on labor by at least about 10 to 12%. That would make our EBIT even better. In fact, our last calendar year, our 23 EBIT has already risen to about 19% from our average of 8 to 9% when Thomas Cook had acquired us. So with this change of Hummingbird, we see that margins getting even more better going ahead. Last but not the least, the Dubai balloon. Finally, the balloon has gone live in March, and April, pretty interesting. The weather has been willing. We've been doing extremely well. There are days when we have been having 100% occupancy on the balloon if the weather is good. Dubai has had bad weather for April and May, so that's why our challenges are more on the flying of the balloon. Weeks out there, and at the even in our budget for the balloon were always a lower ones. So we are very excited, looking for and bring in water. Dia has been having a brilliant last year and a more exciting this year, and the team is extremely excited about bringing in a lot more businesses than we've ever thought before. So with that, I appreciate, and thanks for your patience on whatever I've said so far. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ram. May I request Madhavan for the closing comments before we get into the question answer?
I think I just want to reiterate what all of us have said, that clearly there has been a full recovery in terms of profitability from the pandemic. I believe that the upside is essentially recovering the balance, which will take us beyond the pre-COVID levels, both in terms of demand as well as cost benefit. I must also add that some of our destination management companies, especially in Southeast Asia as well as here in India, have been relatively slow in picking up. But just looking at the order book across all our segments, it's very evident that there is an upside from here. And therefore, I believe that, you know, we can expect better results across each of the group companies. With that, I will end there. And thank you for participating.
Akul, you can now open it up for question and answer.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. First question is from the line of Mithun Aswath from Kiva Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I have a few questions. I just wanted to understand on the travel-related business, you know, the EBIT margin even in the December quarter was only about 2%. And this quarter it is flat. So I just wanted to understand what level of business or if we reach pre-COVID levels. I think on an annual basis, you used to do around 6,000 crores in the travel-related business. Just wanted to understand what level of profitability or EBIT can this business generate, because this is the most sizable business, but does not really deliver any profitability meaningfully despite, you know, revenues being close to 1,000 crores. Wanted to understand what are the reasons for that.
Mithun, this is Mahesh here, and let me take that question, and I'll get Debashish or anyone else to butt in and clarify. To begin with, I think you must understand that the segment results that you're looking at here is a combination of multiple travel verticals here. One, as I mentioned during the course of my commentary, you have the B2C holiday business, we have the B2B holiday business, we have the inbound business in India, we have the inbound overseas business, and we also have corporate travel business sitting in here. So if you look at it, it's a sum total of multiple units or I would say companies who are all getting consolidated herein. And each of them have their set of seasonality. Also, you must bear in mind that when you look at the recognition of segmental revenue versus segmental profit, they are very different. Each of the segments are accounted for very differently, because in the case of corporate travel segment, we only take in the revenues, whereas in the case of holiday segments, we have to take the entire value of sales into the revenue. Hence, if you look at the EBIT margins, it may not be the right way to look at it. Obviously, on a comparable basis, when you start comparing it year on year, you will start seeing this flowing in through. But clearly, for the current quarter in question, as Madhavan also mentioned, and I also elaborated during the course of our conversation, different businesses are at different stages of recovery. We expect the margins to be stabilizing, or the EBIT margins on the business to be anywhere between 7 to 8%, and that's what we've seen. We expect that we should get there in the next quarter, which is where you will see a large part of our outbound business firing in. But then again, you will see the inbound business fires into the October-March quarter, so they will come back in that quarter. So you will see the seasonality element of it, and clearly from a measurement point of view, it should not be sequential quarter, but it should be a quarter-on-quarter comparison.
Just to add to what Mahesh is saying, traditionally Q4 is also what we call our investment quarter, because this is the quarter which is where we spend a lot of money on marketing ahead of the busy season, which is between April and September. And this also happens to be a low season as far as the most of the parts of the travel segments are concerned. So we have the top line remains a little depressed, and the cost goes up because of the marketing spends, the benefits of which actually we reap in Q1 and Q2. So as Mahesh correctly pointed out, if you look at a business quarter-wise in sequence, you may not get the right flavor. You will not get the right flavor, let's put it this way. It has to be a quarter-on-quarter in terms of last year versus this year, because the business has very, very strong seasonality.
Right. So I was just trying to understand, if we were to go back to pre-pandemic levels in the travel-related business,
right,
and we get to a normalized level of business there, what sort of EBIT could that business also generate compared to what we were generating pre-pandemic, which was more in the order of maybe around 2.5 to 3%? Is there a big delta potential? Because last quarter you reported about 2% on about 1,700 crore top line. So just wanted to get a sense on that. And whether you're targeting to get back to pre-pandemic levels in FY24, would it take a little longer?
So, quite definitely so. In fact, you know, if you look at our FY20, which is the last pre-pandemic year, our EBIT margin from the travel segment was about 2.4% for the full year. Okay, we will do. You know, we have done quite a bit of work since then in terms of automation, which has led to increase in productivity, and in terms of reduction of our cost. Our cost transformation, as Mahesh and Madhavan both talked about, has been to the order of about 30% across most of our companies. Now, all that would give benefit as the sales starts rising. You may have seen that our travel sales at overall level is still not comparable to what it was in the pre-pandemic days. For example, the total travel segment sales was 5,742 crores in FY19-20, as opposed to about 3,600 crores. At overall, still about, say, about 65 to 70% for the full year. Now, this number is growing, and but our margins are also our margins are at a better level than what it was earlier. So, as we gradually inch up towards that 5,000 crore number, you will see more and more profitability coming in. So, I'm quite confident. I do not want to give you a percentage number in terms of how much will the improvement in EBIT be, but we are very sure that there will be we will see more and more profits coming out of the travel segment in FY23-24. That's the current financial year.
And if I can just about add to what Debashish said, it's also important to note that for the year ended FY20, some of the businesses that we had acquired, which is the overseas DMS, we realized that there has to be a lot of transformation that had to happen, both from a business and cost optimization point of view. So all of that has taken place during the pandemic, and as they come back to full-scale business, the color of their profit will definitely change and will add to the segmental profits in each of the units that we operate in the country.
Right. In fact, we have seen some of that happening already. I mean, as Madhavan and later on Mahesh was mentioning, some of the overseas units, for example, and if I have to name them, some of them, Desert Adventures, which is a Dubai-based unit operating in the Middle East, our private safaris in East Africa, and the unit that we have in the US, LIT Pro, all of them ended the year at an all-time high in terms of sales. And all of them are loss-making in the year 1920. All of them are now come back to profitability. So, which has added to the overall group profits. Now, going forward in FY24, we expected that they will surpass the numbers they have posted last year, and therefore it will add to the overall profitability of this segment.
Can we safe to say that in FY24 we will reach FY20 travel related revenue, 3,600 crores will go back to 5,700, or is that being too optimistic? And why would we not reach that? Especially since the hospitality sector overall, I think in the country has bounced back quite smartly. So just wanted to understand.
No, I think Mithun, you are almost right. We are not saying that we will not reach back. Our internal estimates are that we will bounce back. As I said, different markets operate very differently, right? Like we saw, we expected China to open much faster, did not open the way it had to. So we had some setbacks there. But clearly, if you ask me, the position from here to the next 12 months, we definitely believe that we should surpass the pre-pandemic levels in most of the businesses that we operate in, specifically in the travel segments.
Right. And as we said, you know, ultimately what matters is the profitability. And, you know, even if we, let's for hypothetically say that we don't reach 100% of FY20 levels in terms of top line, it will be much easier to reach that benchmark in terms of the FY20 benchmark in terms of profitability because of the improvement that we have done in productivity and cost management.
Right, right. Just one, I have a couple of more questions, if that's fine. Your borrowing, your finance costs are close to 90 crores, despite, you know, having quite a large cash pile. So I just wanted to understand how much of this 90 crores is linked to actual borrowing, and can your finance cost or your interest cost come down? What is your cost of borrowing?
No, that's a good question, actually. So, and thank you for asking that. So if I look at your, you know, these interest and finance charges, the overall numbers are 89 crores in this year as compared to roughly about 61.6 crores last year. Now, there are three components in this. One component is a pure interest, which is, you know, which is on loans, short and long term. And that has gone up from 24 crores last year to 33 crores in the current year. Okay. And that's the 9 crore increase is largely due to the one long-term loan that we took during the year, which is under ECLG scheme of the government. That's about 150 crores of loans that we have taken during the year. The balance is on account of there are two other elements to this. One element is the lease rentals. Okay, so there is an interest element on lease, which in terms of accounting has to be classified under the interest and finance charges. Now, that amount is about 13 crores in 2022, and in FY23 is about 12 crores, so more or less the same, so there is no change in that. And that would continue to be, because we have a lot of shops and offices which are on lease, so which will continue to be the 12-13 crore number will continue as a base number. We are not planning to open any new branches or shops, and therefore we don't expect any change in this number. The rest of it, which is an amount of 43 crores in the current year and 24 crores in the year before, pertains to what you call finance charges. Now, these can be various things. These can be the bank charges that we pay for the bank guarantees that we issue, the credit card charges that we use, that we have to pay for our collections, when you collect payments through net banking, etc., there are some gateway charges that we pay. And of course, when you do in the foreign exchange business, we do import and export of physical currency. We call that exim. There are some bank charges relating to that. We call export import charges or exim charges. So all of this, you know, find shelter under this heading called financial charges. This amount went up from 24 crores to about 43 crores this year. This actually reflects the increase in the volume of the business. If you see the corresponding period, our income from operations went up from 1,888 crores in FY22 to 5,047 crores in FY23. And the finance charges are connected to, you know, so this almost tripled. The finance charges are really connected to the volume of the business. Now, will this continue the same proportion, the increase the same proportion? Not really. Because some part of this will tend to, you know, it will not move up directly. It will move up in proportion, but it will not be in direct proportion. For example, the finance charge, the 24 crores as percentage of income from operation, was 1.2% last year. This is now 0.8%. So we expect that this will, you know, there will be some variability, and this will keep on going down as a percentage of the overall number. But we cannot sort of wish it away. Also, as you know, we have moved a significant part of the business online. So a lot of our sales are happening online, and consequently a lot of our collections are happening online. And therefore charges like this, the bank charges, will keep on coming. But I won't, this is connected to the volume of the business, and therefore it brings in the necessary reward. Does this answer your question?
Yes, sir. I just wanted to understand, since you have net cash, I think, to the order of 500 crores, even if I net off the borrowing, I'm just trying to understand, is your the income that you earn on, you know, the extra cash, where is that going, and is that more than the interest outgo? I'm just trying to get a sense of why would you have, you know, borrowings if, or you know, large finance cost if, you know, you have surplus cash. So I just want to understand, and where are you utilizing that cash right now?
So let me handle that question. So our overall cash is roughly about at a group level is roughly about 1,000 crores, as Mahesh and Madhavan had talked about. Now you know that lies in various different buckets. It's not all of it is not you know lying as freely available cash. It also includes the float that we have on the prepaid cards, and that prepaid card float can be used for various things, but it will remain in the, it is, and we do earn, we do put that in our fixed deposit, but these are lying in foreign currency. So we do put part of that in our foreign currency fixed deposit and do earn some income on that. And that's accounted for as part of our other income. So that's there. Also, being a business, being a forex business is one of the largest businesses, and therefore, cash also forms effectively like a bit like an inventory, if I can call it that way, it's like the foreign exchange business. And there would always be some amount of cash lying either physically or in the form of nostro accounts, etc. Now, where is the opportunity? Where is the opportunity of using this? One is of course in paying loans. So if you look at our, you know, if you look at the balance sheet, you will find that our short-term borrowings has come down very, very substantially in March. In this, you know, especially at Thomas Cook, where most of the cash is lying, our short-term borrowings are at a very low level. But we do have 150 crores of long-term borrowing in Thomas Cook and in one other company, which is ECLGS, which is taken for, it's a six-year loan, and therefore we can't really prepay that. We also have some longer-term loans in our overseas company where we had it for handling some acquisitions, which is taken pre-pandemic. We are paying it off over a period of time, so that also will continue to stay. The cash flow, the float balances can be used for various things. One way of using that, obviously, is to do a swap into INR and use it to manage our business better. The swap cost is always cheaper than the short-term debt or overdraft, and we use that money to reduce or manage our interest cost.
Thank you, sir, for all this. Just one last question on the DEI business. In the current quarter, we saw quite a dramatic fall in the EBIT compared to the December quarter, despite revenues being more or less in line. So I just wanted to understand any particular reason for this fall in the profitability.
Ram, may I ask you to answer that question on the quarter performance? Sorry, Ram, are you there? You might have dropped off. Okay, I think Ram has dropped off from the call, but let me try and answer that question. So, in the current quarter, we saw some changes in the way the costs were structured. One major change was that the China business, which was slow moving throughout the year, dormant at times, came back from sometime in February, with the, you know, as COVID moved, you know, as China got out of its COVID problem, the business came back. So we have substantial business in China, two major parks, one in Beijing and the other in Shanghai, Universal Studios and Disney Shanghai respectively. These two came back in operations. Now, when it came back in operations, it's these two typically are parks where the share of revenue that we have to give to the park is on the higher side in the sense higher than the normal average as compared to what we do in other parts of the world, like for example in Dubai, where most of our business is located. that increase the overall cost as percentage of revenue. At the same time, the business in, you know, in the towards the end of March, etc., as summer started setting in, the Dubai business also started getting affected. So between the two, there was a mismatch in cost and revenue. This will get corrected over time. There is no need to. It's a short-term thing which has happened for about a month and a half to upset the sort of balance a bit. But we don't see that as an issue. In addition, as Ram pointed out during his presentation, the balloon in Dubai had just started off. It's in the month of March. So most of the, you know, as the summer wanes in Dubai, this business will, you know, come into full swing and we'll see more and more profits coming out of DEI.
Yeah, there was, sorry, just to add to Devashish's point, many of the one-time costs that had to be borne upfront both in China and the balloon hit us between in March. And you would see that correction, we already seen the correction in April, so I can assure you that that was only a timing issue, nothing more than that.
Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Aditya Kumar from LMI. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. So, I have only one question. Like, on the forex card business, that is, when a person tops up in the card, then any foreign currency, then due to currency fluctuation, who bears that risk of the currency fluctuation? The company or the customer that comes after, that comes in between when the top up is made and the money is used?
Okay. So Aditya, let me take that question. Mahesh here. So clearly, we don't have any open position as far as the prepaid product is concerned, because let me try and walk you through a flow of a transaction. If you were to come to my counter and buy a card for $1,000, you're going to pay me rupee equivalent for the $1,000, and let's say that that rate is 82, so you'll pay me 82,000 rupees, and I would do a back-to-back cover for that transaction, and at the same time, the money will be transferred to a foreign currency account, which is what we call as a nostro account, and will be parked there. The float, and if you would think down to the call, you would have heard Debashish talking about the float balance in foreign currency. So effectively, this goes and sits in the foreign currency account and has foreign currency balances. And when we talk about float, we convert that into rupee and talk about a rupee balance. Now, these floats that are in foreign currency are not kept idle, but are deployed either for working capital through a swap mechanism or parked in long-term FDs, depending on the cycle of payment that we need to do to the merchants when the card are being used. Now, at no point in time there is any exposure on this, because it's a completely hedged transaction at every level of the transaction. I hope that clarifies.
Yeah, so it's when the transaction takes place, the price gets logged in, right?
Yes, 100%.
Aditya, we follow that across the board. All our foreign exchange transactions are fully hedged at the origination of the, on consummation of the transaction.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anushka Chitnis from Arihant Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. I only have one question. In your Q4 consolidated statements, there is an item of other income, other expenses about 136 crores. Which is up pretty high, about 15% sequentially and 135% annually. Can you elaborate on why that is and what the constituents of that are?
Yeah. So, thanks for the question. So, if you look at that, the detailing of that is a lot of it, as we mentioned some time back. This quarter is a investment quarter where we do spend a lot of money on marketing in anticipation of the business, or rather to service the anticipated business in the Q1 and Q2 of the following quarters, or the following year. So the marketing expenses sits in others because that's there is no other place to keep it in the SEBI mandated format. That's the main reason for these expenses to go up. We also got access to during this period. We also set up additional counters, new counters at additional airports. Details of which are given in the investor presentation, and there are fixed airport rentals that kick in from the time we start occupying those counters, and those have also added to the cost.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we move to the next question, reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. Next question is from the line of Senthil Manikandan from iThought PMS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. This first question is from the TCS side. What's your overall take on the new TCS regulation by the government and how will it impact our travel business?
I would think it's a little overblown in that sense to say the impact of TCS. You must realize that it's not 20% because the 5% always existed. So the incremental value is only 15%. That's point number one. Point number two, I think it's not the cost, but it's basically, I would say, upfront payment or upfront money that's getting blocked. And we believe a lot of segments of customers who travel with us and across in the industry belong to either the MSME, SME, or for that matter, proprietorship and partnership, where there is some advance tax payments that they do. And they have an opportunity to offset this at the end of every quarter. Thirdly, I think from a diversified portfolio point of view that we see in our holidays business, we service short haul, we service long haul, and we service domestic. So in the very shortest possible time, you will see some amount of reaction where people will want to understand how it operates and actually see the mechanism of claiming the credits working for about a quarter, where the demand will probably shift to more short-haul and domestic destinations where the amount of money that one would need to block on account of this 15% will not be very large. And very soon, which is the winters, which would step in much later in the next quarter, there will be normalcy returning to the market and people will see that this is only a upfront cost and nothing more. So we don't anticipate anything much to be dramatically changing because this is available for a person to claim at the end of each quarter. So to that extent, it'll be neutral. Also to mention here, the announcement that happened on the credit cards part of it in the last 48 hours actually creates a more level playing field for us, because that is one segment which was outside the ambit and would have led to people actually using credit cards to make payments, which would have then escaped the TCS ambit. So clearly, I think by closing that loop and bringing it under the LRS ambit kind of closes that loop. So there is a level playing field, and we believe it's going to be that much more because the appetite for customer to travel has not changed. If you were to use the word revenge travel, people are traveling. And I don't think it was 5 or 20, it's going to change. Because when 5 happened in October of 2020, we saw a similar bit of flurry and sentiments in the market. But in about a quarter's period, which is about 3 months, we saw people accepting this. So we don't expect too much of things to change in the marketplace.
Great, thanks. Second question is on the DMS entities. So if you can provide what could be our overall operating profit that you generated last year or pre-pandemic level, and what could be our expectation going forward in terms of particularly with respect to DMS entities?
So you have to remove the TCI.
Yeah. So on the DMS entities, see, pre-pandemic, which is the year 1920, as you mentioned, that almost all of them were loss-taking. We had bought them, just to go back a bit, we had bought them in the year FY18. And we bought them at a very very low value, primarily because of the fact that they were making or they are making losses. That's the reason they were getting sold in any case. So our immediate task was to buy, take them over and turn them around, through some amount of restructuring and automation. We got interrupted a bit by COVID, but we achieved that during the COVID period. And now they have reached the level of automation that's desired, which is why the productivity is much more. The markets which have opened up early, like for example Dubai or rather Middle East, Africa, and USA, they must have already logging in profits. The markets which opened up later, Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam, and so on and so forth, which is the Asian market, they are still under losses, but they are expected to recover and start becoming profitable in 23-24. So, in short, we expect the GMS businesses as a group to be completely profitable going forward. The other part of GMS is also the inbound business that is there in India, which is hosted under a company called Travel Corporation of India, or TCI. Now, TCI was not in operation for about two and a half years during COVID. Just started operation sometime in November. This quarter, the Q4, has been a profitable quarter for them, although they are at only about 40% of the pre-COVID volumes, which is expected because this was affecting the first full quarter they had. Going forward, their volumes will start going back to where they were. At the overall margin level, I think the operating margin level, the inbound businesses, whether in India or abroad, earn something like about their gross margins in the range of about 16%, which is a decent gross margin. One area where we have, we are making some additional margin was on the was on a ACIS scheme, which ACIS scheme that the government had floated and which has varied till about 2021, where some sort of a subsidy, if I may call that, was being given for export earnings. Unfortunately, the scheme has now been suspended. It's no longer there. So that would reduce the profitability of the Indian unit. However, that would be more than made up by the profits of the overseas units.
Great, thanks. And just one suggestion. I think in the presentation, if you can provide going forward some more details, specific on the DMS entities, it would be great within the travel segment.
We'll work towards that. Thank you. Thank you for the feedback.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shashank from Crescent Strategist. Please go ahead.
Yeah. My question is regarding Sterling Resorts. I wanted to understand, first thing is that how do we compare ourselves with the absolute members number as compared to the competition, which is also listed space? And the second subsequent point to the same is that how do we or the occupancy of the rooms, because we are much below in terms of occupancy, and is it comparable to pre-pandemic, or how do we have to look at the numbers, because there also we are much below the expected as of the competition is concerned.
Vikram?
Yeah, I'm just taking that. So let me just answer the first part of the question. Sterling has adopted a hybrid model of operation. And in our case, what happens is based on how the market scenario is moving, we have that flexibility to optimize between the resort and the membership business, number one. Number two, we have, in terms of a total number of members, approximately about 80,000 members since the inception of Sterling in 1986, of which about 33,000 or 35,000 are actively holidaying with us, number two. Number three, even as an approach going forward, our approach is very clear, is in terms of premiumization of these memberships. That means I'm not chasing volumes, I'm not chasing units, I'm not chasing numbers, but I'm chasing them effectively and profitably so that they stick with us for the time duration that they are with us. For example, I've mentioned that the down payments are up. So when a person has paid you a down payment of 70-80%, their ability for that person to speak is wrong. Number two, when we say premiumization, we are actually giving those customers a better experience both at our resorts as well as through an end-to-end cycle, and we will continue to strive for that. And number three is that is a far more profitable way of doing business rather than actually chasing in terms of number of units. So our approach is very clear. We will continue to premiumize the membership business and optimize between the segments that we have, and we've done so, and which is why we've seen a 6x kind of a change even over pre-pandemic. That's number one. Number two, as far as the occupancy is concerned, the occupancy in FY 1920 was about 64%, and what we've actually closed with is about
61.
Right. So there is an opportunity in the overall occupancy. But having said that, we also measure the guest ratio. Guest ratio is actually gone up, which has a direct significant impact on the turnover. So the guest ratios, which were typically about 35% to 40% pre-pandemic, has gone up to 60% to 65%, over 60%, 60% to 63% in the current financial year. So there is a chance to optimize that even further. Number three, leisure business is highly seasonal. So the months like July, August, Jan, Feb are extremely low months. Months like April and May are extremely high months. So therefore, even in the past, and sometimes we also do face situations where certain destinations are cut off because of heavy rains. It has happened in Kerala before. It has happened in Himachal before. So during those times, we are not able to actually fill up the inventory there. So as a result, if you look at it from a pure leisure business, I think 60% to 65% is a good score. Can it be optimized to at least 65% to 68%? Yes, it can be optimized to 65% to 68% for sure. And that's what we are also working towards. So we are seeing an upward trajectory there as well. We balance out the occupancies and the yields and the rates. To ensure that we actually maximize revenues through the period and for that year. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, to a certain extent. So my second and the last question is that now how do we compare with, as what you've been telling for last couple of minutes, that premiumization is the core for your business is concerned. So again, coming back to the question, the profitability of your unit as compared to the peer, is it much better? Or because what I understand is it is not. So how do you explain that particular thing when you are doing all the steps which you have spoken out? Still, the profitability as compared to the listed peer are up not there.
See, on the membership profitability alone, if you look at us as a blended business, we have resorts which are generating around 35% operating margins, and we have membership business also which generates certain margins. The membership margins are marginally higher than the resort business, and therefore we are profitable as far as membership is concerned, and much more than the resorts vertical, but on a lower value scale. So that is definitely to be noted. And in terms of base, I think we have a smaller base when compared to our peer members. I think our peer members have larger base, and therefore the EAC, AFS collections for them would be much on a larger scale, and therefore not directly comparable as far as that is concerned. This is Krishna Kumar from Sterling. Another point to note on occupancy, something which I want to add to what Vikram already mentioned is, over the pre-pandemic to the current year, we also added resorts and rooms. I mean, so we actually added around 50,000 room nights over the period of 3 years, and those have come up in hill stations and various other locations. And the occupancy is also catching up. And while we are reporting a 60+ from occupancy over the year, there are months in the year, seasons in the year, where we also touch 75% and beyond. And on the weekends, we also do 100% capacity in many of the weekends in the April, May, June months also. So that's something which I want to add to what Vikram already mentioned.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Akul. Probably you overstepped the time limit, so I don't see any more questions coming up. Maybe you can close now.
Yeah, we can close the call. Thank you so much for the management.
And Madhavan, you would like to say something as a closing remark?
Thank you everybody for joining the conference. If there are any more clarifications, please reach out to Devashish Nandi. His numbers are available or email address, and we will happily respond to any queries that you may have or directed to whichever companies you may have questions relating to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. On behalf of IIFL Securities, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your line.